You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, a historian and longtime Milwaukee tour guide gives us a sneak peek at his new book, which takes readers on a self-guided journey through the city. Right now, it's time for Wisconsin Life. Here's producer Maureen McCollum with a story about a unique museum in the Milwaukee area.
Cats are special companions to many people, including Sean and Hillary Redner. The couple love cats so much, they created Redner's Rescued Cat Figurine Museum, where they display thousands of cat-related figurines from around the world. WPR producer and cat lover Trina LaSousa ventured to Menominee Falls to check out the collection.
That is cool.
Yeah, that's Alice in Wonderland.
That's what I thought.
This one is Alice with the little rabbit. Pretty neat. Now we're going to have to make room in Jan's cabinet.
That's Hillary and Sean Redner opening a package of cat-themed teapots sent to them from Hollywood, California. Getting packages like this happens regularly since they transformed their Menominee Falls home into Redner's Rescued Cat Figurine Museum. They started this as a personal collection back in 2018. Then after some media attention, Sean says fans started sending their own cat-themed items from all around the world.
This was the first collection that showed up. Cheryl Peters contacted us and sent me the phone number, and we got on the phone, and she's like, I'm old. My kids don't want my stuff. I've been collecting this since the 70s. Will you take care of it for me? I was like, well, sure. She goes, no, I need you to take care of it for me. And she started to get, like, forceful. I'm like, yeah, sure. Like, I had no idea what was coming. So everything in this cabinet but those two jewelry boxes has come from Lauai, Hawaii.
Inside the museum are thousands of cat statues, cookie jars, plates, pieces of artwork, nearly every cat-related decoration you could dream of. Sean says most of the Cat Museum's items are either bought from secondhand thrift stores or shared by fellow cat enthusiasts. They hope to someday beat the Guinness Book of World Records for the most unique cat-related items, which currently stands at 21,000 cats.
It's unbelievable the amount of cat stuff that is out there, you know, and it's we're not even close to finding it all.
The museum is also home to 9 friendly rescued cats. And believe it or not, the cats have not damaged any of the items. Sean says all of the pieces are protected in cabinets or secured to the walls.
Knock on wood, they're really actually pretty good. We get that question a lot. But as you can see, almost everything is locked up. We have one cat, Batgirl, who's probably hiding in the house that's been going up and, like, being curious, but I'm hoping it's too crowded.
Donated collections have the original owner's name and location alongside the display. Some of the donations even come with letters. Here, Hillary reads a note from Heather Sweeten of Illinois, who donated nearly 100 cat thimbles.
To the folks of Redner's Rescued Cat Figurine Museum, I am thrilled that my cat thimble collection will have a wonderful new home in your museum, on display for others to see.
Sean says the cat collecting started back in 2018 at a St. Vincent de Paul store in West Dallas. He rescued a framed photo of a cat named Taffy.
It says right on the back she lived from 1960 to 1970. The picture was taken in October of 1967. So I put it back, and I'm like, this is weird. And then I was like, wait a minute. There was Vietnam and the moon landing and what was happening in this house while this cat was bouncing around. Like, I'm bringing that home. And now in our museum, we have a whole wall of other people's cats.
Sean and Hillary started Redner's Rescued Cat Figurine Museum to help support cats. They donate 100% of visitor donations to feline rescues in Wisconsin. To date, about $3,000 has been raised.
What's new, pussycat? Whoa, 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 whoa. What's new?
WPR's Trina LaSousa brought us that story on Redner's Rescued Cat Figurine Museum. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and PBS Wisconsin in partnership with Wisconsin Humanities. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. Find more Wisconsin Life at wisconsinlife.org and on Facebook and Instagram. I'm Maureen McCollum.
Now, have you ever been walking or driving through a city and wondered, why is that building there? Who put a park right in the middle of downtown? What used to be here before these new businesses moved in? If that city happens to be Milwaukee, chances are historian John Gerda knows the answer to that question. He's been a tour guide since 1975 and has written nearly two dozen books about Milwaukee, which is his hometown. His latest book brings the tour to you with an easy to follow route through the city and lively explanations of the history behind the buildings, neighborhoods, and communities that make up Milwaukee. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have a favorite place to visit in Milwaukee? Or if you live in Milwaukee, a favorite walk to go on, maybe when you have that out-of-town visitor? Do you like to understand communities based on a walking around or maybe a bus tour and learning some of the history behind the place you're visiting? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. John Gerda is a writer and historian based in Milwaukee. He's the author of 23 books. Most recently, John Gerda's Milwaukee, A Self-Guided Tour. John, welcome back to Central Time.
Nice to be here. I appreciate it.
Now, you've hosted hundreds of tours in Milwaukee since 1975. What gave you the idea to put all that knowledge and experience into a guidebook?
As you get into your 70s, you realize that this stuff is in your head and it's going to die with you. So it was basically a chance to kind of download information I've gathered over the last 50 years and put it out in the public domain where people can do their DIY tours without me having to rock around in front of a bus.
And you, a city's history can be told in a book or maybe a TV documentary, and you've done lots of both of those, John. What is it that we can uniquely gain from taking that tour on a bus or driving or on a bike of that city?
I think one of the things that makes Milwaukee somewhat unusual is how compact it is, how many small worlds there are in a fairly confined space. And traffic is manageable in Milwaukee. They talk about the rush minute instead of the rush hour. And especially when you're poking around neighborhoods, you're on side streets that are pretty lightly traveled. And you can see, and this tour takes, if you were to do it front to back in one sitting, I guess, or one driving or one biking, 3.5-4 hours. And you can see a pretty generous share of Milwaukee's cultures, Milwaukee history, and Milwaukee architecture. So I think the fact that Milwaukee is so compact, so manageable, I guess another term is human scale, I think that makes Milwaukee somewhat unusual. Imagine doing a tour of Chicago in 3.5-4 hours. Obviously, it's a different scale, but certainly it's also just incredibly congested. So Milwaukee, it's a city, as I said, that rewards exploration.
Let's talk about how to use this guidebook now. Now, if you're on a bike, you can bike to the next stop, then pull over and look at the next thing. You definitely want a sidekick if we're doing this in our car, a navigator in the passenger seat.
Absolutely, yeah. Do not try this alone if you're in a car.
Talking to John Gerda about his new book, John Gerda's Milwaukee, A Self-Guided Tour. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do we gain, John, when we go through the city and, hear the history behind this neighborhood or maybe that particular building or that park over there?
What you gain in this or any other city is urban literacy, in one very simple phrase. I think so often we travel, all of us, myself included, we travel in pretty established ruts. And to get out of those is take some effort, take some intentionality. I have a friend who's now 94, and I gave him a copy of the book, and he didn't, not yet at least, he did not take the tour, but he read through it. He said, there are things I didn't know existed in Milwaukee. So I think for whether you're a visitor or someone who, like me and so many others, is this is our hometown, the fact that you kind of get off your well-worn paths and see where and how other people live can only be enriching.
Let's talk about some of the history and some of your stops here. One of them, now people may have noticed, those weirdly angled bridges that have to cross the river. That's because Milwaukee was two cities that actually shot at each other for a while. Tell us about what we could see, that early history, and what we could see now.
I think they did. I'm not sure the gunpowder was involved, but they did bloody noses. And this is back in 1845 when one side, the west side, was Kilburntown, the east side was Junotown, and they didn't get along especially well. Before bridges, there was no felt need, especially on Byron Kilbourne's side, who was the more aggressive of Milwaukee's founders. no felt need on his part to lay out his streets to conform to Juno's. So when Bridges finally joined, they joined at an angle. And he tried to deny the East Side access to the rest of the world. So that was kind of a slow motion siege is what it was. Tried to sort of starve him out. They succeeded in building one bridge across the river back in 1840, built two more downstream, and the West Siders suffered in silence for a few years. And then one warm night in 1845, and who knows what kind of fuel they were traveling under, they cut off their side of the Chestnut Street Bridge, which is now ironically Juneau Avenue, and let it float down to the river. And the East Siders wake up in the morning to find they can't get out to the west, so they cut off the West Side bridges to the south. So for a while, no one could get anywhere in downtown Milwaukee. So it's kind of a comic opera episode that has come down through history as the Great Bridge War of 1845. They finally realized that they were scaring people away. So they, in the January 31st, 1846, birthday's coming up, just the end of this month, they joined forces as one city of Milwaukee, the first city in Wisconsin before Wisconsin was a state.
And you mentioned what might have fueled the angry disputes and the bridge demolition. Your tour also takes us past some key points in Milwaukee's beer history. Where we can we see some of those important buildings in the beer industry?
All three of the big ones are on the tour, starting with Miller Valley down there on the west side and kind of looping back into the city through the north side. You can see Pabst when you're on 12th and Valit, and then kind of coming up to Schlitz as well when you're coming down through Brewers Hill. So it's it hits all three of those and then runs along Commerce Street, which is now the home of Milwaukee's largest in terms of their volume, Lakefront Brewery, which is the largest craft brewery in Milwaukee. Sprecher's the pioneer, but they're making mostly soda. And Lakefront's got a great tour as well. So we have a beer-soaked history, and that certainly is evident on the tour.
Another thing that strikes me about the book is it isn't just the big buildings or the famous buildings or the industrial buildings, some pretty humble residential ones. One example, the houses that Polish immigrants in Milwaukee built a little bit at a time. Tell us about those and where we can find them.
You know, one of the stops on the tour where you kind of pull over and tell some stories. And when I was leading tours on buses or motor coaches or limousines or whatever, station wagons over the years, one of the favorite stops was always on 14th Street just south of Beecher. And the heart of the South Side, a neighbor sometimes called Polonia, the old 14th Ward. And we stopped at my grandmother's house, who was the daughter of Polish immigrants. And she was one of six kids whose father died when she was, I think, what, 8 or 9 years old. And there were on her family's lot, there were five houses. Humble would be an exaggeration, would be hyperbole. These were small homes, and on her one lot, there were, in these five households, there were 27 kids. There were three baseball teams, you know, on that lot. And the main house type in that neighborhood, and the block is just covered with them, is called a Polish flat. The building inspectors call it an English basement duplex. They kind of sort of gussy it up, but most people in Milwaukee call them Polish flats. And the story was they began with a very simple, on a 30-foot wide, maybe 25-foot wide lot, began with a single-story cottage, a cedar post with no basement, and then as they could afford to, they would raise that off using heavy industrial jacks and brick or block in a second unit beneath it. And the impact was to double the housing space without having to build a whole new house on top of the original one. So it was a rather clever means of expanding living space. And also, as I point out in the tour, these were my ancestors among them. These were peasants in the old country who were not among the landed classes. And most often the basement unit, the half basement unit, would become a place for the first son or daughter who got married to live. They also rented them out, especially to young people coming from the old country. So in the old country, they may not have been land owners. Here they buy the little lot, they're land owners. And if they have a Polish flat and rent that out, they are landlords as well. So it was kind of a psychological as well as an economic landmark. And the South Side is just full of them.
John Gerda is with us, Milwaukee-born historian, author of over 24 books about his hometown. We're talking about his latest, John Gerda's Milwaukee, a self-guided tour. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have a question about a site in Milwaukee, maybe in your own neighborhood if you live there, or a place you've liked to visit? do you have some historical tidbits about your community, wherever it is, that you like to share with friends, neighbors, or out-of-town visitors? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Have you ever done a guided tour with John Gerda in Milwaukee? You can leave a review here. 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our talk with historian John Gerda about his latest guide to Milwaukee. It's called John Gerda's Milwaukee, a self-guided tour. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you like to take tours of maybe your own community, or when you're traveling, do you like those guided tours of Milwaukee or any other city? What do you get out of it? Do you like learning that local history? Join in at 800-642-1234. John, people in Milwaukee might know about, I guess it's its smallest neighborhood, Pigsville. There's argument over how it's spelled, and you dug into the origins of the name. How do we have a Pigsville in Milwaukee?
It's the area just north and a little east of American Family Stadium. It's on the west side, and it's passed by tens of thousands of people every day because I-94 is on the ridge to its south. But it's the smallest neighborhood in Milwaukee, fewer than 300 households. There are 11 streets and 7 end in dead ends. So you don't get there unless you live there or you're lost or on occasion doing a tour. I did a book back in 1980 called The West End. And when I was working on it, I was determined to find out the origin of that name. And the mystery is that there were two spellings. One is P-I-G and one is P-I-G-G. And finally found a woman whose family had been among the first down there who said that when their family first moved to the valley, right along the Menominee River, there were houses on the east bank and a farm on the west bank that specialized in pigs. So the word Pigstown appears in print way back in 1894. And my theory is that someone invented a guy named George Pig, who supposedly had a stagecoach tavern on Blue Mound Road back in the mid-1800s. And I looked for him in the town of Wauwatosa. Tavern records and census records could find no one named Pig. And my theory is that someone invented him to give just a little more cachet to the neighborhood. They got tired of snickering over the years. And you'll still see two G's. It's actually the local media's is kind of their preferred spelling, which drives me a little bit nuts. But P-I-G is the historically accurate spelling.
Now, there are real people who come up on your tour as you look back in the history. Who is your favorite character in Milwaukee history to talk about?
Boy, if I had a chance to go back and have a beer with somebody, it'd probably be George Walker, who was the founder of Walker's Point. He was kind of Milwaukee's original good old boy. Kilbourne was on the west side, was kind of a grasper and a rather unpleasant character. Juneau would have been fun. French Canadian and somebody who graduated from the fur trade to become Milwaukee's first mayor and then got tired of the city and moved out and founded a little settlement called Theresa out in the Rock River in Dodge County. And you have George Walker was the by far the least successful and the most laid back of them all. He weighed 350 pounds at a time before fast food. And despite his size, was said to be the finest ice skater in Wisconsin territory when the ice was thick enough. So he was kind of the local legend I would most like to rub elbows with.
And now it isn't just the early history of Milwaukee. You talk about your tour takes us past the Black Holocaust Museum, the UW-Milwaukee campus. History keeps happening in Milwaukee as the city grows and changes.
As people say, you can never walk into the same river twice. You can never tour the same city twice because it is by nature a dynamic human organism and constantly in the process of change. For instance, and maybe 10 years ago, the area around King Drive and North Avenue, 3rd and North, the old 3rd and North, That had no name. It was part of the Harambe neighborhood, but kind of a somewhat border area. And now that's the new Bronzeville, 21st century Bronzeville. And that has just come alive with cultural resources like the American Black Holocaust Museum, artist collectives, a whole lot more coming from galleries to restaurants. So there's just a lot of energy there. And that's, I love that about cities, you know, Milwaukee and others. You know, they are constantly in the process of becoming something else.
Now, weirdly, one of my favorite parts of your new book, John, is under the copyright, we got the words "all rights reserved," and then right below that, "but tour operators are encouraged to use this guide freely and with attribution." You're hoping your successors as tour guides in Milwaukee take this and run with it.
I certainly hope so. I haven't taken many other tours, but I've certainly read other walking tours and driving tours as well. And there is, I'm sorry to say, a lot of misinformation out there. And I've had the advantage of doing this for the last 50 years. So I would hope that this is a somewhat authoritative guide. And I hope it gets well used, you know, certainly by other tour operators as well. All those ships coming in from Germany and the East Coast. You know, hope this is picked up by some of those visitors.
John, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
My pleasure, Rob. Thank you.
That's John Gerda, writer and historian based in Milwaukee. He's with us to talk about his latest book. It's called John Gerda's Milwaukee, a self-guided tour. It offers a 25-mile tour of the city with maps, directions, and historical captions designed to help readers see Milwaukee in a new way, designed for people riding around on their bike or for someone in a car with a navigator, because it's a book. You don't want to look at that as you are driving around. Still time for you to share your favorite sites to see in Milwaukee. You can email ideas@wpr.org. I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network.